It's time now to get behind the headlines of this week's Hendersonville Lightning with editor and publisher Bill Moss.
The Lightning is on the streets, the Lightning is in your mailboxes, and it's Thursday, which means the Lightning is on the radio. Time to get behind the headlines of this week's Lightning with Bill Moss, editor and publisher. Good morning, Bill Moss. Thank you for joining us for Lightning Radio this morning.
Good. Excuse me. Good morning, Mark, and happy to be back here on a lovely, looks to be sunny day.
Yeah.
On yet another Lightning Thursday.
Yes, quite a warm day. Let's get right to it, Bill. The Lightning is chock full of local news again, as always. And let's start out with really big news that's not just necessarily big news for Henderson County, but all of North Carolina, and that's the Greg Newman case. For the third time in North Carolina history, district attorney has been removed from office.
That it has, Mark. Last week, I think you actually invited me to don my editorial or prediction or handicap hat on this case. And I was one of the rare times I was just kind of afraid to do it. Like, I just, like you say, it's big and historic. And I said, I don't know. I couldn't go out on a limb and say the judge would do it. The judge did do it. Judge Robert C. Irvin. We talked about the grandson of the well-known, you talk about North Carolina history, well-known North Carolina political and cultural history. U.S. Senator Sam Irvin. Well, his grandson, Robert C. Irvin, sure enough, entered this order. We didn't think it would take that long, because this thing has been fast-tracked, and sure enough, Judge Irvin issued an order on Monday, when we were trying to, or Tuesday, I guess it was, on deadline day of the Lightning, and all of a sudden we had a 30-page order with 378 paragraphs from Judge Irvin saying no, Greg Newman is removed as the district attorney for Judicial District 29B, Henderson, Polk, and Transylvania counties, as of the filing of this order right now. And here's the reasons why. And it frankly seemed kind of airtight the way Judge Irvin spelled out. We talked about last week before, maybe even week before that, and in the weeks we've been covering this in Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com, the North Carolina bar cases, the disciplinary hearing commission cases, the complaints, the reprimand, and the actual order of him to be not disbarred but have his law license suspended. That order stayed, so he still had a law license, but right at this moment does not have a job nor a salary. It's a big case, historic in our county and, as you say, in the state of North Carolina.
And so that took effect immediately?
It did. We do not, at this, as we sit here, do not have a district attorney yet. At this moment, we do not have a district attorney. Governor Roy Cooper must appoint a district attorney. The lawyer for Greg Newman told me that he would appoint one. I've seen in some other media, I saw a reference to whether this would be an interim or would be termed or described as an interim. I'm not sure about that. But keep in mind that we are really right upon, the election is upon us, really. The filing for it would be this coming December for all the county constitutional offices. Sheriff Lowell Griffin will be on the ballot. Our Register of Deeds, Lee King, and the other constitute, and our clerk of court, Jay Tyler Ray, all will be on the ballot. And so will this seat. It's a constitutional office, of course. That will be on the ballot. So I don't, whether it's called district attorney or assistant district attorney, would be really academic, I guess you would say. So filing for that, I'm not sure it's really even decided because the legislature has some work to do on some of the timing because of the late arrival of census data and so forth. But the primary, which tends to be decisive in our county, yeah, and in this judicial district, will be either March or May. So we're going to have a new district attorney one way or another. That's a long answer for saying no. He's not it. Someone else will be.
But one of the important things I learned also in this story, Bill, is that, and you mentioned it just a moment ago, Greg Newman has not lost his law license. He is still able to practice law, and he can still run for other elected positions. Of course, he was our mayor for a while.
That's a good point. I think both are true. Has a law license, could practice law, could run for something else, but not this office. Somebody, it's interesting you should mention that. Somebody mentioned to me that that this would not prohibit him from running for this office. That's not true. The wording in state law and the wording indeed in Judge Irvin's order is Greg Newman is permanently removed. He can't run for this. The only way he can have this job. Again and again, I asked his attorney, David Friedman of Winston-Salem, this. I said, "Well, how does this work?" And he said, "No." He couldn't stay the order to be removed by appealing. He could appeal like Jerry Spivey down in Wilmington did, and went all the way to the North Carolina Court of Appeals, and it did go to the state Supreme Court, which set a great deal of kind of precedent and guardrails and boundaries and guidelines for how these work. The Spivey case is cited all over the place on either side when it comes to one of these removals. And the only way Greg Newman, and this is, we should mention this, has not been a for sure decision from Greg Newman out of his mouth, at least that I've heard, whether he is going to try to do this. But his appeal would mean appealing this all the way, presumably, to the state Supreme Court and getting reinstated. He would have to be reinstated.
Okay.
But you're right. Could Greg Newman run? A lot of talk, a lot of people jumping in, especially on the other side of Madison Cawthorn.
Yep.
In a race for Congress. Greg Newman has run for Congress, you might recall,
yep.
Back about three or four cycles ago. So Greg Newman, I've said, is a heck of a retail campaigner. He's a strong campaigner. I don't think we've heard the last of Greg Newman, but certainly he's got some baggage to lug now for whatever he runs for.
Sure.
Can you imagine an opponent might point out some of it?
Just might. And, of course, that full story is in this week's Lightning. Bill, before we take our break, let's do some give us some roadwork updates that you have in this week's Lightning. For Henderson County?
Yes, let's, because we have plenty of it.
Yeah.
Clear Creek Road reopened. I actually think it was maybe late last week. It was scheduled to reopen Monday, but they got it in a little ahead of schedule. They're doing a good job, really, on this overall on the I-26 project. There's not been, the horrible blockage and all that everyone suspected it might be. They've done a good job, just as they are right now, closing I-26 or the westbound lanes or the eastbound lanes of I-26 overnight, so it's not in the busiest travel time. So Clear Creek Road is reopened. The new bridge, nice new bridge, is open. They are taking down the old bridge, and that's causing some closure overnight of I-26. Brookside Camp Road is scheduled to close May 3rd for 14 days in order to shift the roadway from the old bridge to that new span. So that one is done. Butler Ridge Road is being constructed, reconstructed in place. It's on schedule, and that's expected to reopen on September 11th. So that's a ways off. Then we had some other, this is from a meeting that we covered with the Transportation Advisory Committee, U.S. 64 improvements, those roundabouts and some widening and improvements of U.S. 64 through mostly Laurel Park from Blythe Street to just west of the Laurel Park boundary. Right-of-way acquisition scheduled to start in June with a contract let date of May 2024, so it'll be here before you know it. Improvements of we got an update on that. Those improvements at Five Points for Hendersonville High School, that's going to have to move up a year, and it is going to be done by next summer. Those pedestrian improvements, yep. And a left turn lane into the new parking lot of Hendersonville High School, and a right turn lane also into the parking lot.
Yep.
That is scheduled for next summer. So read about that, and then we have the final subhead in that story. It says this, Mark. These roads are terrible. And it's And it's a gentleman by the name of Louis Zembrowski that just took the initiative to sign on virtually to the Zoom meeting of the Transportation Advisory Committee and announced to the elected officials who make up this committee that is supposed to give advice on roads, like, well, you guys, do you know that roads are terrible in our town? And he's talking about what we're hearing more and more about is, well, what about road maintenance? What about repaving? What about, you know, these roads that they feel like the road to Kandahar? And he mentions North Main Street, King and Church, of course, 7th Avenue East, Signal Hill Road, and others. And then he said Lonnie Watkins, who's the head DOT engineer for our area, said most of those, Louis kind of described him or was blaming the city or the county, and Louis points out that, I mean, Mr. Watkins points out, these roads are DOT roads. A lot of them are scheduled for repaving. And he mentioned, we get this question a lot, Church and King are scheduled to be repaved next summer, the summer of 2022. And the other roads that are in poor condition are somewhere down the road, as it were, expected or scheduled to be repaved, or at least, as Mr. Watkins said, they're on our radar as needing to be repaved.
Okay. Let's stay here, Bill, before we take our break, because we're talking about roads. Let's stay on roads and let's go to Highland Lake Road, the highly, you know, the controversial and much anticipated reworking of Highland Lake Road. Apparently, the bid came back as double what it's projected. What's the stand there now on Highland Lake Road?
Here we go on the ever hated, ever beloved Highland Lake Road project has come in at double the projection. Contractor bids range from $6.1 million to $7.2 million. That's a report by Mayor Nick Weedman at a meeting also last week of the Local Government Committee for Cooperative Action. And that exceeded the projection, the NCDOT's projection of about $2.5 million. It exceeded that by a cool $3.5 million. It was so far over the projection that under NCDOT rules, they were not permitted to award the contract. And now they are rebidding it out of Raleigh. They're still going forward with it. They say you've seen the utility crews out there moving power lines already. So they've cut down the trees, obviously, at Pinecrest Presbyterian Church, so it's supposed to be rebid, and it is supposed to be let now May 21. It's supposed to be underway late summer, early fall, for about 2 years. So one way or the other, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, or even if the creek do rise, I guess we're gonna get the Highland Lake Road project.
So rebidding it out of Raleigh, are they anticipating that somebody's going to come back with a bid that's closer or to what they anticipated it to be?
You know, that's always strange to me when, I mean, we're all for public records, but and transparency, but always strange to me that, you know, that they have a projection, which is known, that now they have the other bids, which are known. So if the contractors are, as apparently they are with all the booming growth we have, despite the pandemic, as busy as they are and maybe not that much in need of work, what's to stop them from coming in, you know, a dollar below this other,
right,
this other low bid that was too high? I don't really know the answer that, you know, how, what the expectation there is, but I guess, you know, when this triggered a second bid out of Raleigh, if this is also, quote, you know, more than double the projection, I'm not really sure what happens, to tell you the truth.
It'll be interesting to follow that story and see. I mean, does NCDOT have to just sit and go, okay, well, I guess we're going to have to pay a whole lot more than we anticipated, or what?
Well, that's right. I mean, part of the cash crunch that we were talking about a lot a year ago, 2019, and then certainly And then once the gas tax, you know, fell off the cliff because of the lockdown of the pandemic in March of 2020, a lot of that problem also was, this is not a new phenomenon, a lot of that project was also NCDOT bids coming in and projects and construction prices coming in way more than projections.
So, uh-huh.
Costs are up all kinds of supplies. Everybody's heard that, from home improvements to new construction to everything else, and costs are up. And I do think contractors are busy, and they don't need to. This is not the recession time. We had a pandemic recession, but it has not been a construction industry
exactly.
recession where they can bid low because they need work. We're
right.
not in that.
Right. Exactly. All right. We've been we've gone a little bit here. So let's take a break. We'll come back with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Crab Creek community rallying against storage units. We'll talk about their feature story, a spring discovered in Laurel Park, and an asphalt plant update. That's all coming up here on Lightning Radio on WTZQ.
Kaysen Builder Supply, the official sponsor of patio season, providing quality landscape and masonry materials, exceptional customer service, and superior delivery from locations in East Flat Rock, Brevard, and Greer. Now is the time to prepare for patio season with a visit to Kaysen Builder Supply in East Flat Rock to see displays of outdoor rooms, pavers, retaining walls, and fire pits. Kaysen Builder Supply, providing exceptional service for over 40 years, the official sponsor of patio season. Kaysen Company.
And we are back with Bill Moss for Lightning Radio here on the queue as we get behind the headlines of this week's Lightning. Bill, NIMBY Nation stepping up again. Crab Creek community is rallying against storage units. It also goes right back to road work, right?
That it does. NIMBY Nation indeed is rallying against a pretty big storage unit proposed for Crab Creek Road across from Curtis Drive. That is to set, you know, there's that ambulance station out there. There's Evans Road. It's going toward Brevard or DuPont Forest from Evans Road. It's before you get to, it's between that and Camp Blue Star that people know about. It's a 9.5 acre site. It's on the left hand side of the road if you're driving toward Brevard. People around there don't want it. So if you think it's kind of sparsely populated, try to put something like a shooting range or apparently a mini storage center on some property, and you see it's not as sparse as you thought. We drive into a follow-up to this. You'll read more about it on HendersonvilleLightning.com and read in next week's print issue is the coverage of the Zoning Board of Adjustment that was supposed to decide this case of the mini storage units. They had more than 50 people in the room and outside of the room because of the pandemic restrictions. Restriction could not all fit in, and they postponed this meeting till June 30th because of the big turnout. So lots to come with this one. The opponents have hired an attorney. They're becoming ever more common and popular in these cases. The opponents told the Zoning Board of Adjustment they would like to get experts to talk about traffic. This would bring too much traffic, they say, to talk about stormwater runoff, to talk about noise, to talk about lights, to talk about lighting and noise, and come back to Zoning Board of Adjustment and say, we don't want the storage units.
And I know that Lightning will continue following this story, so we look forward to that. Let's jump ahead a story, Bill, because it's close to this one also, and give us an update on the proposed asphalt plant in Flat Rock, in East Flat Rock.
Sure, you're exactly right. Talking about roads, what are they made of? Asphalt. Jeff Shipman would like to have the asphalt plant we talked about many, many times there on Spartanburg Highway at the US 25 connector, and it is now headed to the County Commission. And you asked me last week when that was. Well, when that will be, then the answer is they set a public hearing on the rezoning request, County Commissioners did, for 5 o'clock Monday night. May 17th at Beau Thomas Auditorium at Blue Ridge Community College. I think people will be, it will be in person. People will be spaced apart. There's been a capacity. I don't know if we'll still have a capacity. I guess we will have capacity restriction at that point. I think that room holds about, what is it, around 400 or so. They've allowed around 150 during these times. I think I've covered two or even three meetings there. So look for that to happen at 5 o'clock on Monday night. People get the opportunity to tell the county commission why they would like the asphalt plant. That would be Jeff Shipman and his attorneys and company and his expert witnesses, and the many, many dozens of people who would like to tell the commissioners why they wish not to have the asphalt plant on that location.
Exactly, because it has to be rezoned in order for it to be at that location.
It does indeed have to be rezoned under a special use permit that Mr. Shipman has applied for.
Okay. That'll be interesting to find out what happens. Now let's move on to something fun. Bill, you've got this as a feature in this week's Lightning. A spring was discovered in Laurel Park. Talk to us about that, Bill.
We know about the rich and colorful history of Laurel Park. There's so many fun things that always come out of Laurel Park to me, as far as history. We know it goes back to the late 1800s and the early 1900s, and W.A. Smith developing the lake, Rhododendron Lake, that now is a park, Lake Rhododendron Park. The pavilion, the gondolas, the Crystal Springs. Crystal Spring is well known at the bottom of the hill. But this was a kind of mid Laurel Park. Really, I would call it. It's off of Echo Circle, kind of behind Echo Mountain Inn. They discovered this spring. There was a kind of not really a property dispute because of the owners of official owners of the property actually deeded this piece of property from Echo Circle down to Hebron to the town of Laurel Park once all this was discovered and straightened out, that it was an old spring developed around, let me see here, thanks to Paul Hansen, who does such great research on everything, the town commissioner and kind of, as we say, unofficial historian of the town. He researched the platting of the subdivision back to 1912 and found that the spring was there, so they went out there and looked for it. They had some hikes down there, couldn't find it. It was so covered in ivy, grown up with rhododendron and everything else, and they finally found the spring, and the Boy Scout troop, thanks to Eagle candidate Asher Hicks of Troop 603, I think it is, Asher and young Asher Hicks and his crew have been clearing that site. They uncovered the newly discovered Glen Rock Springs, and now that's really a pocket park there in Laurel Springs, down below Echo Circle and up above Hebron, and is part of the ever-growing, very ambitious plan in Laurel Park to have trails, walking trails, all the way up from Laurel Green down at the bottom of the hill to Jump Off Rock at the top.
So this new little park right there with the spring, that's something that will ultimately be open to the public.
It will be. It's owned by the town. It's owned by the town. You can get to it now. It's a little steep. I had to go down there to this event to make pictures and to talk to the scouts and talk to Jenny Brown. She's the terrific chair of the Parks and Greenways Committee. She used to work for Eric Holder and Janet Reno, as a matter of fact, as a prosecutor down in the U.S. Attorney's Office in South Florida. She's Nancy McKinley's sister. Nancy McKinley, people might know, is a local realtor and a member of the Laurel Park Town Council.
Yep.
So Jenny Brown and her Parks and Greenways Committee has been working on this. Actually doing the labor, chainsawing trees and helping clear, and then they got it sort of clear enough, doing that heavy work for the Boy Scouts to come in and do the rest of the work. So you can go to that. You can go to that right now, Mark. You can get down there.
All right.
You can really get down there from Echo Circle, or you can climb up from Hebron. And as I say, part of this network of trails in Laurel Park.
Fantastic. Bill, with our last couple of minutes here, let's touch on some awards, some very, 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 very well-deserved awards. We'll start with the United Way. The United Way gave their annual honors recently.
They did indeed. We had some big awards. There's that Rob and Ginger Cranford Community Service Award. That went to McRae and the late Judy Benson. Sadly, passed away around a year ago. And that is really, the most prestigious, very important award. When the pandemic hit last spring, the United Way said, McRae and his team partnered with United Way staff to create the COVID-19 Response Fund, which raised and distributed more than $440,000 to local nonprofits on the front lines of the pandemic. That's from the United Way statement. And then named for a beloved former executive director of the United Way, the Edward C. Is it Brisley or Brisley? You would know as a former. But the Brisley Award.
Yeah.
That went to Dr. Jan King, recently retired as an assistant superintendent for instruction for Henderson County Schools. Congratulations to Dr. Jan King. And then the Outstanding Philanthropist Award, a new award this year, went to former Representative Chuck McGrady and his wife, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
Back to that COVID-19 relief fund, they gave a huge pump prime donation of $100,000 to get that underway.
Yeah.
You can read in the Henderson Real Lightning, HendersonRealLightning.com, about the United Way Employee Giving Award, the United Way Live United Awards, the United Way Rise United Awards, and other details of that virtual celebration, which took place last week.
Yep, and you were very, very close, Bill. It's Brisley Award. You were very, very close.
Okay.
And again, we'll take our last moments here. We were able to announce we had Summer Stipe with us yesterday on the radio for Henderson County Education Foundation. And, of course, they announced and inducted yesterday the latest of their Education Hall of Fame and the Hall of Fame inductees. Bill, you want to announce that?
Yes, we do. Those are Nancy Carolyn Edwards. She spent most of her 35-year teaching career in Henderson County Public Schools at Hendersonville High School, Edneyville High School, North Henderson High School, and taught sociology, U.S. history, and English, and other subjects. She has and also been an original member of the Henderson County Education History Initiative, a great teacher and volunteer and servant of our community, somebody that you and I knew well in the Kiwanis Club for many, many years.
Yeah.
Marvin,
yeah,
always called Marv. Marv Larson, he moved to Henderson County after his retirement as a chemical engineer, a great volunteer until he passed away in 2014, and headed up for 26 years the Terrific Kids program, a Kiwanis program that back when I was serving in leadership role in Kiwanis, I went to a few of those. Always a really, really fun thing.
Yeah.
And then Wayne Morgan, he spent 20 years teaching in Henderson County Public Schools at East Henderson High School as a phys ed teacher and a coach of sports, football, track, basketball, volleyball, and also taught gymnastics. He was Teacher of the Year for East Henderson back in 1993. So congratulations to Ms. Edwards, the late Marv Larson, and Wayne Morgan for their induction.
Yes, all very well deserved. Bill, there's still plenty more in this week's Hendersonville Lightning. Tell people where they can pick up their copy.
All around the town at Lightning Orange Racks or dealer partners such as coffee shops or convenience stores or the Publix grocery store is a good place to get a single copy of the Hendersonville Lightning, or by going to HendersonvilleLightning.com and clicking on subscribe. And that'll walk you through how to join the growing legions of Lightning fans and get their Lightning today, Lightning Thursday, or also fun and pleasurable. Call Jan at 698-0407.
You've been listening to Lightning Thursday with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of the Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. This program, as well as past episodes, can be heard in their entirety on our website at WTZQ.com. Click on air and scroll down to Lightning Thursday.